This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Millions of Iranians commemorate the 45th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution, led by the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini. On the 128th day of the U.S.-Israel genocide in Gaza, fresh Israeli airstrikes kill at least 25 people and injure dozens of others in the town of Rafah. And the former Iraqi prime minister urges the complete withdrawal of American forces and calls on the government to establish a timeline for U.S. troops removal.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
Today marks the anniversary of the victory of Iran's Islamic Revolution, which toppled the U.S.-backed regime 45 years ago. Every year, millions of people across the country take to the streets to celebrate the occasion and to reaffirm support for the revolution. Led by the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, people in Iran rose up against the corrupt Pahlavi regime in the 70s. The protests culminated in the ouster of Pahlavi's tyrannical rule and the triumph of the Islamic Revolution on the 11th of February, 1979.
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi there speaking at Azadi Square, obviously, to a jam-packed area there, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, here in the capital, Tehran, and not only in Tehran, but in the Islamic Republic of Iran, around the world, listening to his speech. A very important one. Just going to highlight the ending there of what he said. It was a long speech where he talked about the expulsion of the Zionist regime from the U.N., the regime has rebutted 400 resolutions that has been issued against it. So what use is it for that regime to be part of it? All economic ties should be broken against it. And he said, we will celebrate the victory of Palestine and that the Zionist regime will be destroyed, hopefully soon. Let's bring in our guests for this segment. Masoud Shajar is joining us here in the studios. He's the chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission. All right, Master Shajar, welcome to the program. So 45 years, congratulations, obviously are in order. And maybe I should just continue with the line that Ebrahim Raisi was stating there towards the end. I mean, when it comes to the fact that Imam Khomeini said that he stands up for the oppressed, and that's what the Islamic Republic stands for to a large degree, none perhaps is embodied through the oppression that's happening to the Palestinians. And of course, now we're seeing how Iran's leader has said the true veil of the West, i.e. the U.S., has come down, and we're seeing what they stand for. Tell us why Iran, in that regard, and based on the Islamic Revolution and its ideals, has proven to be successful.
Absolutely. I couldn't help thinking about all this, especially today. 45 years ago, the enemies of Iran were plotting and planning, and they were saying that it's going to take months, not even years, to get rid of this revolution, which stood for oppressed around the world. And, you know, now 45 years, after all the plotting, after all the sort of obstacle, Iran is not just extremely powerful, but it has held on to its value of standing for the right of oppressed. And we are witnessing this in the last few months in the shape of the support for the Palestinian community and their right while it's being violated in such a way. And today, you know, witnessing what is happening in the streets of Tehran right now, we see the popularity after 45 years. I mean, this is amazing. On one side, holding on to the values of standing for all oppressed around the world and discharging that responsibility so beautifully and so effectively in the last few months vis-a-vis Palestine, but also the popularity within its own citizens, what we are witnessing right now in Tehran. This is really a celebration of showing that all the plotting, all the sanctions, all the propaganda, everything has failed. And Iran, after 45 years, is as strong and as committed to its values as has ever been.
Thank you very much for your thoughts. We appreciate it, and it's a pleasure to have you. Masoud Shajar, Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, here in the studios with us. Thank you. Robert Fantina is an author and journalist who joins us from Kitchener. Robert Fantina, welcome to the program. Taking a look at how this marks the 45 years since the Islamic Revolution happened, there are many, especially Western media in general, who portray this to have withstood the test of time. But the Islamic Revolution didn't have to actually prove anything to the West or otherwise. Tell us your views about, first of all, how you think this Islamic Revolution changed at least the timeline here in West Asia and the way it impacted the world.
The Iranian Revolution was a major accomplishment for the people of Iran and sets an example for other people around the world. The United States can be defeated. The United States had established, of course, and supported the puppet government of the Shah of Iran, which is extremely brutal. And the people in Iran, very courageously, many of them sacrificed their lives, but they wanted to establish, they wanted self-determination. They wanted to be able to establish a government of their own liking, which is what they did 45 years ago. The Western media never expected the government to remain this long. They never expected this, the overthrow of the Shah. They never expected the establishment of a people's government in Iran. These are things that are examples for the rest of the world, for those who are oppressed by the United States or their own government, often supported by the United States. So we can look to the Iranian Revolution as an example for oppressed people everywhere. It was not easy for them. As I mentioned, many people lost their lives in the pursuit of this, but 45 years later, the revolution still stands and the people are living the way they wish to live.
During a visit to the Lebanese capital, Beirut, Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, reiterated Tehran's call for a ceasefire in Gaza. He also demanded Washington stop its support for the Israeli regime, saying that it will only sink the U.S. in the swamp of war.
To Lebanon since the beginning of the genocide in Gaza, Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, called on the United States to immediately stop its support for the Israeli war on Gaza.
The Zionist regime looks forward to bringing the U.S. down with it and drowning it in the swamp of war in the region. The U.S. must stop its support for the Israeli regime, the killer of children.
Iran's top diplomat met with Lebanese caretaker Prime Minister Najib Mikati, stressing the need to exert all efforts to reach an end to the Israeli aggression against Gaza. He also met with Lebanese Parliament Speaker Nabih Birri and Lebanese Foreign Minister Abdullah Bouhabib, who uncovered that Lebanon has presented a proposal for a possible solution.
Lebanon's suggestion for a sustainable solution to reinstate calm and stability in South Lebanon includes a comprehensive basket of solutions, which guarantees the implementation of UN Security Council Resolution 1701, ending all Israeli violations of Lebanon's sovereignty, and guarantees the withdrawal of Israeli forces from all Lebanese territory, including the Sheba Farms and Kfar Shuba Hills.
Iran's foreign minister reaffirmed his country's position of calling for a stop to the Israeli hostilities in Gaza.
If the U.S. genuinely wants to reach tranquility in the region, then the means for that will be through stopping the genocidal mass killings and crimes and enforcing a halt to the war launched against Gaza and the West Bank.
The Iranian minister also met with Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah and discussed with him the latest political and security developments in the region, especially in the Gaza Strip and South Lebanon. Observers believe Abdullahian's visit differs from the Western envoy's visits, since the Islamic Republic of Iran considers the security of Lebanon as the security of Iran and the region. Usually, visits by Iran's foreign minister include back-to-back meetings with top Lebanese officials, including Hezbollah's leader, Said Hassan Nasrallah. But this visit is different since it comes at a time when the region is on the verge of a possible war. And despite all attempts by Amir Abdollahian to push for a ceasefire, the U.S. and Israel are continuing the massacre of Palestinians. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas warns that Israel's planned operation in overcrowded Rafah City in the southern Gaza Strip could cause tens of thousands of casualties. Hamas said that any military action would have catastrophic repercussions. Meanwhile, at least 25 Palestinians have been killed and dozens more injured as Israeli warplanes hit a residential building in Rafah. Many of the Palestinians here say that they will not abandon their homelands. In the statement, a large group of families of displaced Palestinians in Rafah called on all world powers to prevent an Israeli massacre in Gaza. Israel's plan to invade Rafah, which lies on the Gaza Strip's border with Egypt, has also drawn international reactions. Jordan says another bloodbath in Gaza cannot be allowed. Spain and Germany warned of a humanitarian catastrophe if the plan went ahead. According to the UN, some 1.3 million Palestinians are living in unsanitary conditions in Rafah and have no access to running water. Survivors and witnesses of Israel's latest airstrikes in Rafah describe their harrowing experiences, including losing friends and family members.
My sister and her husband were sleeping there in the room, and my mother and my other sister with her children in the living room, and me and my father in the room over here. Suddenly, a rocket fell on us. My sister, her husband, and their children, including my niece who is 2 months old, all gone.
Around 11 o'clock, the whole family was asleep, including the displaced people staying with us. We were woken by a massive explosion. I woke up to check and looked around the house, only to find that the ground floor was completely fine. The building above was burning. The fourth and fifth floors were hit by a rocket, possibly an F-16 aircraft. We were shocked to see the entire house burning. We began searching but couldn't find each other because of the darkness. We sat for about a quarter of an hour until we could see each other. We entered the room where my son was sleeping and found him, along with his wife, children, and mother-in-law, all dead and torn to pieces. Whether the Israeli army enter Rafah or not, our safety must be ensured. This means we should leave and head to a safe place, even though we are convinced there is no safe place. We have witnessed this in the north and Khan Yunis, and in the middle. They tell you there is a safe place, but on the way they bomb people. As long as there is no safe place, as long as there is a government like this, a Nazi-like government, there is no safe place in Gaza. They came with the intention to kill.
The Hamas resistance movement has called on international and human rights organizations to document Israeli forces' killing of a 6-year-old Palestinian girl in Gaza City. The movement said Hind Rajab, along with her relatives and 2 paramedics, were deliberately killed in cold blood by Israeli forces' gunfire. Hamas urged international bodies to document the horrific crime as a prelude to taking legal action against Israel's criminal forces and its Nazi leaders. The Palestine Red Crescent Society accused Israel of deliberately targeting the ambulance it sent to rescue Hind Rajab after she spent hours on the phone begging for help amid the sound of shooting echoing around her. On Saturday, family members found Hind's body, along with those of her uncle and aunt, their 3 children, and 2 ambulance workers who had gone to save her. Thousands of Israeli protesters have rallied in Tel Aviv demanding the resignation of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Protesters demanded the release of Israeli captives held by Palestinian resistance groups. They called for holding snap elections. The premier has been under fire for prioritizing his political interest in Gaza over the lives of the captives. Netanyahu has been in hot water as he is embroiled in a series of scandals. The Israeli premier is charged with fraud and the breach of trust in a number of cases. This has prompted protesters to take to the streets almost every weekend to call for his immediate resignation. Meanwhile, thousands of protesters in the Austrian capital Vienna have taken to the streets to demand an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Protesters marched through the city center, waving Palestinian flags and placards reading Stop Infanticide. They also called for boycotting international companies supporting the Israeli genocide in Gaza, in particular McDonald's and Starbucks. Since the Israeli genocide in Gaza, people around the globe have taken to the streets to condemn the regime's crimes. They have urged their respective governments to boycott Israeli goods and to sever ties with the regime.
On Saturday in the Italian capital of Rome, thousands of people braved lashing rain to hold a rally to show solidarity with Palestinians under attack in the Gaza Strip. The demonstration, which started in one of Rome's most touristic areas near the iconic Colosseum, was organized by a string of groups including the Palestinian Youth Movement and the Association of Palestinians residing in Italy. A number of Italian political movements also took part to the demonstration.
What we have here is an Italian government which is utterly servile to the interest of Israel and the United States, and together with the EU is complicit in the genocide and ethnic cleansing against the Palestinians. And this is why the conflict is spreading in West Asia.
According to Italian authorities, more than 850 large and smaller rallies in support of Palestinians have been held across the country since the start of Israel's onslaught on Gaza in early October. Last week, some injured Palestinian children reportedly arrived in Italy from Egypt to be hospitalized in the country. People at the rally are saying, why can't the Italian government also work to stop Israel's genocide of Palestinians in Gaza?
Providing medical care to Palestinian wounded children is a highly hypocritical move by the Italian government in an attempt to rebuild its tarnished image. The Italian government is among the first to support Israel and continues its support even now that the International Court of Justice has recognized the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza.
The only hope I have now is that the latest peace talks have failed, is that some miracle will happen before Israel launches its final strike on the overcrowded town of Rafah.
Another major pro-Palestine rally was also held in Florence, while two large-scale demonstrations will be staged in Italy's northern cities of Milan and Bologna on Sunday. Max Civili, Rome.
Iraq's former prime minister has once again called for the total withdrawal of American forces from the country. Adel Abdel-Mahdi was speaking in an interview with Iran's Al Alam News Network. He said the Iraqi government must take a clear position on this issue and set a date for the U.S. to take his troops out of Iraq. Abdel-Mahdi said American forces were deployed to Iraq based on the Iraqi government's decision and that their withdrawal does not need any decision by the U.N. Security Council or the Iraqi parliament. He added that Americans entered Iraq under the pretext of protecting Iraqi people but are now killing them. His remarks came after a recent U.S. military drone attack killed a senior commander of the Kataib Hezbollah resistance group. Back in January, Iraq's Prime Minister Mohammad Shia Sudani said that Baghdad wants U.S.-led military forces to immediately leave due to their destabilizing effects. The Pentagon, however, has announced that it has no plans to withdraw its troops from Iraq. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, warmest greetings to you all around the world. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, February 11th, 2024. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Thank you.
Welcome to the program, and on behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, I extend my sincere congratulations on the occasion of the 45th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. This historic revolution, under the wise leadership of Imam Khomeini, opened a new chapter in Iran's history and realized the long-held aspirations of the Iranian nation for freedom and self-determination. Over the past 45 years, the Islamic Republic of Iran has achieved significant progress in various fields, despite facing countless sanctions and pressures. The revolution has guaranteed Iran's independence and paved the way for scientific advancement. Congratulations to all freedom-seeking and justice-seeking people around the world. Here we are with you with listeners, a special program broadcast on Sunday. And this is a program where your views are presented through your emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. And here we've received reception reports from around the world from Ivan Zeleny from Russia, one of our old and regular listeners, from Santu Bahakat from India, and from David Mabi from Finland. So, Ivan, Santu, and David, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And we've received emails and letters from around the world from Nasiru Hassan from Nigeria, one of our old and regular listeners. Hey Mercia from the Philippines has sent us a piece of email. And here we've received an email from Anand Mohan Bain from India, one of our old and regular listeners. Stay with us, please. I will be back with you. Welcome back. This is another edition of Listeners Special. And as you may know, today marks the 45th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. The 1979 Islamic Revolution of Iran, spearheaded by Imam Khomeini, centered on the principles of justice and a struggle against hegemonic powers of the world, and laid the foundation for other movements across the world from South Africa to South Asia. Imam Khomeini had the distinction of being the first world leader to break all ties with the then South African apartheid regime, as well as the Zionist regime in Tel Aviv, bravely declaring them as illegitimate entities in what was widely regarded as a daring move by the Islamic Republic. Over the years, the Islamic Republic of Iran remained steadfastly devoted to one of the key founding principles of Imam Khomeini's movement against global arrogance and international Zionism, that vowed an all-out unified effort to liberate Al-Quds and the entire occupied Palestine from the genocidal occupation and its Western backers. So let's see what our listeners say. Nasiru Hassan from Nigeria has sent us a piece of email. Let's see what Nasiru Hassan says. Today I am writing this message to congratulate all Muslims and the entire oppressed people around the world on the 45th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. The Islamic Republic of Iran became the voice and protector of all oppressed people, irrespective of their religion, skin, color, or country. Wherever injustice and oppression are, the Islamic Republic of Iran opposes. As a Nigerian, I have no word to use to show my happiness on this important anniversary.
The Islamic Revolution in Iran was the bridge that Allah the Almighty used for bringing the light of guidance to my country, Nigeria. We consider any harm on Iran as a harm to us, and any positive thing to Iran also a progress to us. Despite the difference of geographic location between Iran in the West Asia region and Nigeria in West Africa, I pray to Allah to give me opportunity to come and visit the Islamic Republic of Iran and see the hardworking staff of IRIB English Radio. First of all, a warm salam and greeting to you, Nasiru Hassan from Nigeria, from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Many thanks for your consideration, your thoughtfulness, and your attention. What you described about the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution and also the Islamic Republic's role in protecting all oppressed people around the world actually was correct. We hope to see you in Iran soon, as you hope that to come and visit the Islamic Republic of Iran and see, as you described, the hardworking staff of IRIB English Radio. Thank you for your compliment, actually. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL or QSL, EQSL actually, as confirmation to this email. God bless you. Please write to us soon. Welcome back. This is another edition of Listeners Special. And over the past 45 years, the Islamic Republic of Iran has achieved significant progresses in various fields despite facing countless sanctions and pressures by Western regimes. According to data released by Scopus, Iran published 78,225 scientific articles in this database in 2022. Accordingly, Iran is ranked 15th in the world in terms of publication of scientific works for the fourth consecutive year. Scopus data in 2022 shows that Iran ranks first among countries in the region in terms of the number of scientific publications. A review of Scopus data from 2014 to 2022 shows that Iran has always been the first among the countries in the region in terms of the number of publications and has been able to maintain this position. According to the data of the Scopus Index, the Tehran University of Medical Sciences has the largest share in Iran's scientific publications by publishing more than 6,800 works. In total, nearly half of Iran's scientific publications in 2022 have been published by 10 universities in the country. Meanwhile, the latest data from the Web of Science in 2022 shows that Iran ranks second among countries in the region. So, and this happens after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. And Hey Mercia from the Philippines has sent us a congratulatory message on the 45th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Hey Mercia from the Philippines says, "Dear IRIB, I would like to congratulate a happy 45th anniversary of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. I would say that the revolution was a prelude of something big to happen for the next decades. Congratulations to you and all the people of Iran. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you. Hey Mercia from the Philippines, and thank you very much for writing to us. I'm grateful to you for this congratulation message, and actually congratulations to all freedom-seeking and justice-seeking people around the world. So please accept our electronic QSL or EQSL as confirmation to this email. Hey Mercia from the Philippines, we wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Please tell us your views about our programs in your upcoming emails." Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, has said that the West exerted pressures on Iran in order to isolate it, but their efforts in this regard backfired. He described making progress under economic siege and the most severe pressures possible as indicative of the Iranian nation's bright performance. The leader added, the United States said the economic pressures they have put on Iran are unprecedented in history. Despite all their lies, they were true to this. The leader highlighted the progress made in science and technology and Iran's ranking among the top countries of the world in fields such as nano and biotechnology, health, aerospace, nuclear defense, infrastructure, medical centers, and oil refineries. With regards to foreign relations, the West's efforts to isolate Iran have failed, he has said. The share of Iranian articles with international participation has had significant growth of 209% during an 8-year period between 2013 and 2020, becoming the Islamic world's leading country in science, diplomacy, and that is according to Scopus International Citation Database. Today, universities in Iran are flooded with women, confident, happy, and self-assured. The Muslim majority country's literacy rate for women is among the best in the world. Various studies have credited it to the founder of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khomeini, who called for the active participation of women not only in politics but also in higher education and the public sector. After the Islamic Revolution in 1979, women were given equal rights to shape their futures. The revolution provided them a chance to build their distinct political identity, and they have been tremendously successful in doing that. Iranian women are today far more politically aware and enlightened than their counterparts in other Muslim societies. As per the 2020 statistics, the overall literacy rate of women in the country was 85.5%, more than that of men at 80.8%. Surprisingly, this female literacy rate happens to be higher than the global average. And that's nice. And it all happened after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. So let's see what Anand Mohan Bain from India, one of our old and regular listeners, says. Anand Mohan says, Namaste to IRIB English radio staff. I am Anand Mohan Bain. I have been listening to your program since 1995. I am writing this message for you to congratulate World Radio Day 2024. If possible, please include my email in your program. A warm salam and greetings to you from Tehran, Anand Mohan Bain from India. As far as I know, Namaste is a way of greeting in Indian. Thank you. Nice. Okay, World Radio Day 2024 happens to be on February 13th, the next 2 days. So congratulations on World Radio Day 2024. Anand Mohan Bain from India, thank you for this email. We also wish you luck. An EQSL or electronic QSL will soon be sent to you as a confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Anand Mohan Bain from India. And here we come to the end of our today's program. Again, on behalf of all IRIB English radio staff, I extend my sincere congratulations on the occasion of the 45th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. Congratulations to all freedom-seeking and justice-seeking people around the world. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with us. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Spotlight. Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Tragedy after tragedy, war crime after war crime, and the genocide continues. This is the description of what has been happening in Gaza since October the 7th. The Israeli regime continues trying to raise the bar on just how much it can torture Palestinians. The majority of the population of Gaza has been displaced, some of them many times as they were told to leave the north and head towards the middle and then to the south. And now as people have gone as far south as they can go, which is Rafah, the sadistic Israeli regime is threatening a ground invasion where almost 1.5 million people are located and most of them in tents or in other temporary locations. So we're going to take a look at the latest of this genocide in Gaza on this Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Bachaimer Abu Saada, Professor of Political Science, Al-Azhar University, Doha. And Paul Rudy, co-founder of Free Palestine Movement out of Berkeley. Thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start this off in Doha. Well, Mohammed, your thoughts on what the Israeli regime is trying to do, trying to accomplish at this point in time, in your perspective.
Well, many thanks, Marzia, for hosting me in your program. To be honest with you, as a Palestinian and also as a Palestinian who lived the Israeli war against Gaza at the beginning of it, it seems to me that Israel has gone crazy. The Israeli leadership, the Israeli army, the Israeli regime as a whole, they've lost their mind. What they are doing against the Palestinian people is beyond imagination. The magnitude of killing, the destruction, going after Palestinian children, women, civilians, destroying hospitals, clinics, and schools and universities, nothing has very much escaped the Israeli killing and the Israeli destruction. And now they are preparing the ground to go into Rafah, where they very much have pushed 1.4 million Palestinians from the north of Gaza and also the central refugee camps of the Gaza Strip into the south city of Rafah. And as we have heard yesterday, that Netanyahu gave the orders to the Israeli army to prepare for the ground invasion of Rafah, where, as I mentioned, there is 1.4 million Palestinians in tents. Most of them are living in tents with little food, with little potable water. And that's going to be the mother of all tragedies. That's going to be the mother of all Palestinian Nakbas if the Israeli army goes into Rafah with this large population in a very small piece of territory, which is 62 square kilometers. That is the territory of Rafah. And usually Rafah is a house of is housing roughly 350,000 Palestinians.
Right.
But
right.
Now there is 1.4 million Palestinians there. It seems to me that Israel is trying to make one thing, punish the Palestinians collectively. That's what Israel has been doing for the past 4 months, going after the not They're going after Hamas, but they are not going only after Hamas. They're going after the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip. That okay. is collective punishment.
Stay with me, Mohammed.
That is genocide against the Palestinian people.
Stay with me. Let me get Paul in on this conversation, this discussion. Now, none of the goals that the regime announced in the beginning for going into Gaza has been met, Paul. Zionist forces have not destroyed Hamas, nor have they been able to free any of the captives, but of course, they have been successful in killing many kids, infants, women, and in general civilians, and they have destroyed much of the infrastructure. Your take, were these the actual goals to begin with?
I think that's the main goal. I think they intended to use the Hamas action to liberate Palestine. I think they'd intended to use that as a pretext for another Nakba, another genocide. Their objective is less about getting rid of Hamas because they know they can't. And because they know that if you get rid of Hamas, which is impossible, you simply have another resistance movement replacing it. I mean, the Palestinians, no people is ever going to give up their liberty and and accept the kind of prisoner relationship with Israel that Israel was demanding. And in fact, Israel doesn't care about a prisoner relationship. From the beginning, since 1897, you could even say 1895, the objective of Israel has been to eliminate the Palestinians. And so they're using this as a way to achieve that. I think their objective is not to punish Palestinians. It is to eliminate Palestinians. That is the entire, the beginning and the end of their objective in Gaza and the rest of Palestine.
Hmm. Well, Mohammed, Palestinians not only have to deal with the bombings and targeted sniper killings and relocation and starvation, but there's also another aspect, which is the psychological torture. The regime is constantly flying drones overhead with a constant humming sound to let everyone know that they are there and can be killed at any moment. I want to talk about that side of things. And in your perspective, why is this regime so inhumane?
Well, Marzia, I have a mother who is in Rafah. I have brothers and sisters and nephews and nieces and many relatives who are in Rafah, and I talk to them every now and then to try to make sure that they are okay and they are fine. It's not only the bombing and the pounding of the Gaza Strip. In addition to that, the starvation. Israel is not is allowing only a very limited amount of food and water for the Palestinians. Lack of medical supplies. It's the cold weather that also is killing and making Palestinian children sick as a result of the very cold weather that the Palestinian people are facing in Rafah with no homes, living in tents. And it seems to me that it's all of that. In addition to all of that, yes, the Palestinian people cannot escape Israeli snipers. Not only in Rafah, but all over the Gaza Strip. There are Israeli snipers in the north, in Gaza City, in Khan Yunis, where very much they shoot at anything that moves. We have seen over the past few days that Israeli army, snipers of the Israeli army killed Palestinians in Gaza City around the Shifa Hospital. They killed Palestinians in Khan Yunis around the Al-Amal Hospital, which is in Khan Yunis, and Nasser Hospital, where there are hundreds, if not thousands, of Palestinians displaced, went to these hospitals seeking protection, seeking safe places. But there is no safe place, unfortunately, in Gaza. So it's just it's a atrocity after atrocity, and the number is rising. We're talking about now almost more than 100,000 Palestinians are either dead, missing, or wounded as a result of this Israeli massacre against the Palestinians. We're talking roughly about 4% of the Palestinians in Gaza are affected, as I mentioned, dead, injured, or missing as a result of what's going on.
Right.
And unfortunately, all of this is happening under the watch of the international community.
Yes, I want to get, stay with me. I want to actually stay with me, Mohammed, because I want to touch on that aspect of it a little bit. Well, Paul, as you heard about the ground invasion that Netanyahu is calling for in Rafah, and as Mohammed had said, if you're talking about a population that before was about 280,000, now 1.4 million, as Netanyahu is telling them to leave. I mean, where are these people supposed to go? What are they supposed to do?
As far as Israel is concerned, they don't have to go anywhere. They can be killed right where they are. They can be exterminated. And in fact, I think the count that we are hearing from the Ministry of Health in Gaza is a gross underestimate of the dead and wounded. Right now, Palestinians are dying without being counted. They are starving to death. They are dying of disease because of the cold and because of the bad water and because of the lack of sewage services and the filth and they're dying from exposure because they don't even have, we call them tents, but they're not really tents. They're just scraps of material that have been used to create tents. And they're dying from all of these things. And the Ministry of Health is not really counting them, nor can they count them. After all, if a family member is extremely ill and dying, are Palestinians going to take them to a hospital that doesn't exist, that doesn't have services to offer them? No, they die anonymously in the middle of nowhere, and they get buried on the side of the road, wherever family members and volunteers from the community can bury them. There are mass graves all over Gaza now, in all sorts of places. I think the statistics are gross underestimates, and that this problem will increase a lot. The only way we'll know how many people in Gaza have died and from various Israeli inducements to death through cutting off resources and letting them die of starvation and disease is by waiting until the end of this and then counting the population afterwards and comparing it to what it was before October 7th. That's the only way we'll ever find out. And I think the result is going to be terrifying. It'll be horrible.
Right. It already is horrifying. So, yeah, one can only imagine it getting any worse. Now, Mohammed, with Netanyahu openly announcing his intention for the regime to invade Rafah, you mentioned the international community. Let's talk about that side of the things. He has said his intention. We know that 1.4 million people are basically trapped in this area without any protection. And yet, basically, the regime has been given the green light by the U.S. and its accomplices, along with the U.N., to kill, to torture, to maim, until basically it seems that there's no Palestinian left. Your take on this so-called international community at this point in time?
Well, first of all, Marzia, let me say that maybe what Netanyahu is trying to do now by preparing the ground to invade Rafah is trying to put pressure on the Palestinian resistance to give up on its conditions with regard to the so-called prisoner exchange deal with Israel and with regard to the conditions that put forward by Hamas. But if that military pressure doesn't work, then at the end of the day, there is nothing going to prevent Netanyahu from invading Rafah, because he has already invaded, let's say, more than 80% of the Gaza Strip, the north, the central area of Gaza. Khan Yunis is now under heavy Israeli pounding and bombardment. Now, going back to your question, it's just so sad that all of this is happening under the watch of the international community. And the only thing that we hear from the UN, from Israel, from the EU, that they are worried about Israeli plans to invade Rafah. They are worried about the number of Palestinians who are being killed. That's what we hear. Unfortunately, this is not enough. I mean, we've seen how the UN, how the US and EU have dealt with other countries who invaded their neighbors. Mainly, I'm talking about Russia. Nothing is compared when it comes to what Israel is doing against the Palestinians. And by the way, the number of Palestinians who have been killed, especially Palestinian children, is like way many times than the number of Ukrainian children who have been killed in 2 years, for example. But the international community, meaning the U.S., EU, and many countries, have boycotted Russia and put like a number of economic and financial sanctions, but none of that has happened. And just to say that the international community is worried, that's not enough. That's not helping the Palestinians. That isn't protecting the Palestinians from the genocide that is taking place in the Gaza Strip. And I wish really we really see some serious steps taken to prevent Israel, to put enough pressure on Israel to stop the genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza.
Well, Paul, whole families have been wiped out, infants haven't been spared, and the injured in hospitals have received no mercy, nor have the doctors from the Israeli forces, which have targeted all, young and old. I mean, what does it take to call what we're seeing a genocide by the so-called international community? I mean, what does it take to call out all of these war crimes by that same so-called international community?
There's an American writer by the name of Upton Sinclair who was a fighter for the poor and disenfranchised at the opening of the 20th century. And he said, it's nearly impossible to make a man understand something that he's paid not to understand. And that's the case with the international community today. The international community is being paid by the United States, in effect, not to understand what is happening there, not to pronounce the word genocide, not to condemn Israel. It's all a matter of coercion by a very racist and aggressive international policy from the United States leading the West. This is what's happening here. I don't think that Hamas is going to change anything because of the genocide that Israel is perpetrating on the Palestinians, because they know that the Israel's intention, whether they compromise or don't compromise, is still going to be genocide. And so what's the good reason for doing that? Furthermore, the genocide that Israel is practicing is driving Palestinian young men to be fighters with Hamas. Hamas is getting stronger as time goes on, and Israel is really a basket case. They're economically, they're falling apart, and they're losing soldiers that is very difficult for Israel, which they can't stand to lose soldiers. They can't have to have captives in the hands of Hamas and the Palestinian resistance. So and 500,000 Israelis have already left the country, and we know that they're living with 300,000 refugees from the north of occupied Palestine to the south. So businesses are failing in, despite the money that the United States is pouring into Israel. I think, you know, if I had to put my money on an outcome of what's happening there, I'd put it on Hamas and the resistance. I think they are winning this.
Right. Well, Mohammed, interesting what Paul said. He puts it on the resistance because, I mean, basically we see what is happening to the Israeli regime, that it is coming apart at the seam. But at the same time, it continues to create so many different tragedies inside of the Gaza Strip. We saw the body of 6-year-old Hind, the little girl who was missing for 2 weeks after calling the emergency number to report her father being targeted in their car, and it was found the emergency unit, which was looking for her, was also targeted, and the vehicle they found was just mangled iron steel with no one surviving. I mean, there's so many stories, so many tragedies, that just one of them would be enough, usually, for a so-called civilized international community to call this regime out. What else has to happen to stop this sadistic regime and call it out for the Holocaust that it is committing?
You know, it's good that you brought up the issue of Hind and her family. And you know what? The sad thing is that the Palestinian Red Crescent, who went save Hind, they went with coordination. There was supposed to be a coordination between the Red Cross, who coordinated for the Palestinian Red Cross with the Israeli army to go and save Hind. And unfortunately, Hind was missing for many days, and the Palestinian Red Crescent who went to save her were also missing. And we just knew about it today that Hind is dead with all of her family members. And the Palestinian Red Crescent workers who went to save her are also dead. It seems to me that Israel has crossed all lines. Nothing is stopping Israel from committing such crimes, which again are happening under the watch of the international community. And I guess even the measures which the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, has asked Israel to do about 2 weeks ago, Israel has not implemented those measures. Israel is, I don't even know whether Israel is going to report to ICJ a month after these measures were supposed to be in place. It seems to me with the impunity that has been provided to Israel by very much the U.S. and many Western countries, Israel believe that it has the right to do whatever it wants against the Palestinian people, and it feels that it can escape punishment. It feels that it has the impunity to do what it wants under the pretext that the 7th of October supposedly was carried out and inside Israeli territory, and that killed 1,200 Israelis and took 240 Israeli hostages. The Israeli reaction, which even President Biden, the U.S. president, said yesterday that the Israeli retaliation against the Palestinian has even gone more than anyone has ever imagined. So even the U.S. started to speak out against this Israeli disproportionate use of force, which is, in my opinion, it's a genocide.
So sorry, I'm just about out of time, Mohammed. Paul, do you think that we're witnessing the collapse of the whole liberal system as their hypocrisy has been exposed to the whole world and they're refusing to stop this genocide? How do you see it?
I think this is correct, and it's not due just to the genocide in Gaza, but also they're losing on every front you can imagine. Ukraine in Europe is another front on which the so-called liberal democracies of the West are floundering. The world is changing, and unfortunately, it's very painful to watch it changing. It's not changing in a cooperative way, we could say. The old order is of colonialism and Western domination and a bipolar or unipolar world is dying. And that death will first be projected onto other peoples like